Hey, welcome to the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Once again, time to do what? All together now. Up the down staircase, in the outdoor, if at all possible, make sense out of the senseless and find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. Dun, dun, dun. Hey, glad to have you back with me one more time, listening all over planet Earth. I got an email last week from somebody in Ireland, which I just found fascinating. The email was very short. It was, I really enjoy listening to your rants and raves way over here. I think it was some little town I can't pronounce, and I don't want to get in trouble by trying to do it. But then I was listening to them in their Irish brogue trying to do that email. And I'm not Irish. I don't have an Irish bone in my body. So it was kind of interesting. I'm like, well, I wonder what they sounded like if they would have said that. Anyway, thanks so much for listening wherever you're at in the world. And glad to have you joining me, as I said, one more time. Really excited about this show because somebody besides me is going to get on and bloviate, speculate, and probably will verbally defecate. There's no question about that. My gal pal Jen Weigel is joining me from just outside of Chicago. Hey, Jen.
Now we got to use bloviate in a sentence all day long.
The bloviation begins.
Love it. Love it. Thanks for having me, John. Always great to talk to you.
You too. So I have your bio up here. We don't have enough time to read it, though. But let me just give you some highlights.
It's because I'm old.
You know, you're like me. So you get to a certain point and you go out and do an event or you go on a radio show or whatever it might be for your books or what have you. And they read your bio and it sounds like a eulogy.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm in my back nine,
buddy. You too. I'm in the
back nine.
I look at everything in football terms. I'm late fourth, maybe early fourth quarter, not quite late fourth, but I'm getting there.
Okay.
Award-winning broadcast journalist, won an Emmy for your on-camera reporting for CBS, ABC you've worked for, NBC, WGN, TV and radio, and WLS. A reporter, a columnist for the Chicago Tribune from 2010 to 2015. Your I'm Spiritual Damn It podcast ran on WGN Plus for several years. You've racked up more airtime than any human being I know. Your books, however, Stay Tuned, I'm Spiritual Damn It, This Isn't Life I Ordered, and Psychic Healers and Mediums, A Journalist, A Road Trip, and A Voice from the Other Side, all these listed as bestsellers. And somewhere in the middle of all this, you find time to be a mom and still hang out with all the regular folks. So how do you do all this?
I don't know. I'm exhausted just hearing that, like you said. You know what? It's cool because now, like you mentioned earlier, getting a fan from Ireland. Yeah. I apparently have some huge fan base in New Zealand and Australia from my podcast, The Jen Weigel Show, that I do now. And it's just so crazy how connected we can be to other parts of the world because with just a click, you can connect. And, you know, I've always just believed like you have, John, that, you know, if I don't get these stories out of my head and onto something, whether it's, you know, I'm a storyteller, so the venue changes. Sometimes I'm on stage, sometimes in the radio, sometimes television, sometimes podcast, audiobooks, books, whatever it is, the stories have to get out or I'll just crack up. I mean, I don't know how I can function without getting the stories out. And that's just how my lens is. But everyone's got a different lens, you know?
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a spiritual constipation for me. If I don't, you know, do this, there's something inside. It's like this constant pressure. And you're 100% right. You know, I never thought I'd be in radio. It just was where that first calling took me. Never thought I'd write books. That was like a second step. And all these things, I think the more you say yes, the more things open up. And then if you say no, then they shut down. And that's just the way the world goes. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I was thinking about, would you go back to this, you having fans in New Zealand, Australia, and all over the planet that listen to you and read your books, is that, you know, when you and I got into radio back in the day, this didn't exist, really.
No.
So if you, for example, on WGN here in Chicago, that was it. You know, when I grew up, WGN was on the radio from 5 a.m. till 10 p.m. on the radio over the refrigerator.
Yep.
And that's all. And it is fascinating and still a little baffling to me, but very powerful that you can click these buttons. You and I are connected here. People are going to listen all over the world. They can connect with you. That's the good side of this. The bad side of this is there's a lot of shit that flies around because of it. But it's like monkeys throwing crap at each other, right? It's just kind of how humans are. So you got to take the good with the bad. But one of the things I want to start talking about first before we get to all the important stuff is this neti pot thing.
Everybody starts with a neti pot.
Start with the neti pot, because this is neti season for me as well. Just the other day, I started pulling the saline salt packets out, stirring it up, putting in right nostril or left nostril. Where do you start?
You start, I go left to right, so I tip right and I go into the left. You know, here's the thing with a neti pot, though, and for those who are listening going, what the hell is wrong with this? They're talking about neti pots. Wellness is a big thing for me, and I think that what our society, our world, tries to keep us sick so then we have to pay for a cure instead of keep us well, and then we don't have to go looking for the cure. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of sort of illness bouts in my family, and my dad died of brain cancer. And when all this stuff started happening, I'm kind of going, wait a minute, how can we keep the engine clean, right? I mean, we treat our cars better than we treat our bodies. We get our engine, you know, checked when the check engine light goes off. We put in the best gas, but we would never put, you know, that kind of care into our human container. And it kind of blew me away when I was pregnant with my now 15-year-old son.
Can't believe that. You know, can't even believe that.
You and me both. Don't even get me started.
Has he got the razors out yet, or is he drawing in the lines?
Oh, for gosh sakes. Yeah, no, there's razors. I'm like, what? Where did this come from? He's using my... I guess I won't be using that on my legs today. I don't even want to think where he used it. But anyway, so yes, when I was pregnant with him, I treated my body like it was a temple because I was a condo for a kid. That's what you are. You're a condo for a baby. So then what? You have your child and you go back to eating crap. That was what the mentality was. And I thought, well, why can't we always remember we're always a condo? So the neti pot thing, I was a wellness columnist for a while, not just with the Tribune, but with the Chicago Sun-Times, another paper here. And I realized, apparently there's a protocol here, Jen, for the neti pot. You got to do it a certain way. You can't just use any neti pot. You have to have it's got to be hard, not plastic, right? Ceramic.
It has to
be ceramic, and here's why. Because cleaning it after you jam that thing up your nose with all the different bacterias and stuff that might be floating around, if you don't clean it well, and you use it without cleaning it, you're just basically pushing germs further into your sinuses, and that can cause a serious sinus infection.
Wait. I'm supposed to clean it when I'm done?
Yeah.
That's crazy, a new one on me. Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so anyway.
The neti pot thing was, I was introduced to this way back when I was at Oprah Radio and I was producing the Dr. Oz show for that channel, for XM.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And somebody, this has got to be 07, 08, somewhere in there, and somebody sent, I think we had a guest on, and talked about the neti pot. Now, the neti pot is thousands of years old. This is not new technology. Right. It's a little shoehorn-looking thing where you put water in and some saline, and you stick it in your nostril. And as Ms. Weigel has pointed out, you tip your head, and it runs out the other side of your nose.
It's fascinating. I mean, the first time I did it, I was like, whoa, what's happening? This is crazy.
I know. It's like aliens come out the other side. Yeah. Amazing things I've seen.
Yeah.
And so Oz gets on the Oprah show. So that was on radio, but then he gets on the TV show with Oprah and talks about it. Literally, Jen, you could not find a neti pot in North America for 4 months.
I'm sure.
Just exploded. So hopefully those people are using those. But when you said neti pot, I'm like, well, there we go. Connect right with that, because
that's exactly right. Well, unfortunately, I had the variant. You know, you can do all the quote right things and still get this damn virus. Yep. And my son and I both were down. Thankfully for him, he just was feeling crappy for like 2 days. But for me, it was a longer ride. And I'm still having this residual kind of sinus stuff. But the good news is, We are fine. We got over it. You know, the majority of the cases I'm hearing of these people getting the variant are thankfully not good, coming out the other side okay and just fine. But there's a neti pot need after a while. That's all I'm saying.
You know, I get this image of it. You know, when you talk like that in that voice, I think of somebody down over there, you know, on Halstead Street.
Over by there.
Get that going there. And they got, and some guy, you know, some knuckle dragger going, hey, I listened to Weigel yesterday. I'm going to stick this in my nose and see what comes out the other side.
Well, it's just amazing. When I would write for the Chicago Sun-Times, it's a very wonderful working class paper. You know, the emails I would get from people saying like, what? It was the blue collar paper. And I love that paper. And so when I would write about things like a neti pot or hydration or whatever, that really 90% of us are dehydrated. And so when we get tired in the afternoon, we think we need coffee. Really, the first thing we should do is drink water. Like, who knew? Your body is just like slogging because you're so dehydrated. But, you know, I would get these emails from people going like, I never in my wildest dreams thought that water would work better than coffee.
Yeah.
And I would always put that voice in it with, I never thought in my wildest dreams. But you know what? I love connecting to all shapes and sizes. That's what it's about. You know, we're all really just breathing with air in our lungs and a beat in our heart. Who cares where our zip code is? We all want the same things. We want to be loved and we want to be lovable, and that's it.
That's exactly right. You made a great point before about, you know, you clean up your act to have children and to a greater or lesser degree. And you know, we take better care of our vehicles, hopefully, than we do of ourselves. But sometimes I think people forget that, you know, one of my favorite places to work out, as I have over the many years, was a YMCA. And it was a reminder every time I walked in, it's mind, body, and spirit. It's all three have to be in some sort of balance. And nothing surprises me when I see people way out of balance on one thing or the other. So you could be intellectually brilliant, but be a sloth, you know, so you're out of balance. Or you could be, you know, a workout fanatic, but you can't hold a conversation and or emotionally bankrupt. And one of the things that you've done so well in all your books and all your work is do the balancing act to try and bring those things into some sort of alignment. And coming up in November, because this is going to air on the 23rd, coming up on the weekend of November 5th, 6th, and 7th, first of all, I'm so thrilled that you even included me in this, but you're having this All Souls weekend thing at the fabulous Abbey Resort in Lake Geneva. So a lot of what we talk about on the show today is a little bit of what's going to happen on that weekend. And is it not trying to get part of what this is all about is bringing those things together to get people to renew themselves a bit?
Yeah, no, it's totally connecting with your people and getting inspired, right? It's all about getting inspired to be able to just get out of bed and be the best mom you can, coworker you can, spouse you can, parent you can, whatever it is. You've got, you know, challenges, we all do. But when we gather together with like-minded people and you hear other people's trials and tribulations, I love getting a room together of people where others share their stories where that they were faced down because things weren't going so well. And then all of a sudden, everything changed because they changed their mindset. And the mindset is a very powerful tool that we just don't activate often enough. Very simple things. And so I love gathering people together in a room, and that's what we do. We did this first 4 years ago. My dear friend Amy O'Keefe and I decided that All Souls Day is a big holiday for the woo-woo, right? And as you know, I've been investigating woo-woo things for 20 years.
You are the woo-woo investigation team.
But I'm grounded, and that's why I love it. It's like you can straddle both, right? And so we decided All Souls Day is like this belief that, you know, that all souls can, it's like we're all connected, right? And so I was raised a Christian varietal where, you know, you could be a jerk Monday through Saturday and then go say you're sorry on Sunday and it was all okay, which always confused me. So I was questing my whole life, interviewing different people, trying to get answers. So here on All Souls Day, which is traditionally right after Halloween. So there's Halloween and then there's All Souls Day, and it's a different kind of meaning for different cultures. We wanted to bring meaning with people getting together to celebrate their soul, revive their soul, connect with other souls. And so that is what we do. And we had to, of course, not do it last year in person. We did a little mini virtual version, but this is our first time back in person with other people in my happy place, which is Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. Fontana, actually, on the west side of Lake Geneva, which is like an hour 15 north of Chicago for those who aren't in this area. And it's just so cool to be able to reconnect with people in person. And so we're doing it at a smaller scale because we used to have double the size, but people are still a little freaked out with the variant, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, people such as yourself and other authors, you know, with intuitive abilities, if you will, I'm fascinated by people who have had either near-death experiences or came in their gifts really late in life unexpectedly. Yeah. Like they weren't planning it and all of a sudden they're hearing stuff and they thought they were crazy. And this is just validating for a lot of people who are questing and wanting to learn more about what this whole wiring system might be.
Mm. Well said. Like you've said this before.
I don't think I've ever said that before. I don't know what came out of my mouth.
Pretty amazing. Let me know. Pretty amazing. We'll listen to it. I'll play it back and chop it up.
Accordingly,
my friend. Overnight. You know, every talk like that, I think Burt Wyman Ford. Okay, let's go see Burt Wyman. Listen, you've made a point there that one of the most challenging things has been for me my entire, for most, like three quarters of my life. I got electrocuted when I was 19 years old. I didn't know that was on the plan. Who the hell would know that? It shifted something in me that I can't explain and has never left me. And it comes and goes when it feels like it needs to. And to be a regular guy, to hope that the Bears are going to knock the living shit out of somebody on Sunday, but then 20 minutes later know who's going to call, and they call. That's a little discerning and
disturbing.
Disturbing and throws me off. Even to this day, as so many things that I've had happen, I've written three books. The last book, Phenomenon, is filled with some of those things. And I still to this day get a little unnerved when it happens. So you know, when I go out and talk and do this stuff, I come from a perspective of a total, you know, like one-celled organism for the most part. Mm-hmm. And yet these other things happen. And I've always been fascinated, as you have, that somehow this is all going on without us realizing it. And then when you tune into it or connect with it, it's amazing.
Right.
The information that's available. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
But we're not in it, right? And so I've interviewed so many people, John, who have died and lived to talk about it. Like, those people are so fascinating to me because they've been there, they've seen stuff, and then they come back and they're like, so here's what's going on over there. And, you know, to hear what their firsthand account of, well, quote, heaven or the other side or whatever, and then to be able to say, look, we are all connected. It's like one giant oriental rug. There's dark, there's light, but from way up high, it's a pattern. And there is a method to this madness. And we all think that it's about us and we're so unique and, oh, I'm different than they are. We are all connected with the same thread, believe it or not. And I know people didn't want to hear that during the election and during COVID and during everything else.
Sure.
But anybody that triggers you, right? And I mean, by trigger, you just get infuriated by something they say or do. That is just a reminder. It's pushing on your mm-hmm. bruise. It's a reminder of something you haven't healed inside of you yet,
right?
Because we're all connected. Same rug, people. Same rug.
Same rug. That's a great way to put it. And I think about, you know, the difficulty to some greater or lesser degree to bring that message to the masses. So when we're all together at the Abbey for the All Souls weekend, those are people who are seeking, wanting to be reminded, whatever. And yet to get on the radio and do this, or to write books about it even, and try to work it in a way that doesn't freak people out. Look, you're much more comfortable with woo-woo than I am. But I think about the difficulty of that, and that old saying is that, you know, our job is to only awaken as much as we can ourselves, not to wake other people up like forcibly, because it just pisses them off. But I've seen over time, as I just remain as authentic as I can with, this is my experience. These are the things that I've seen. This is the stuff that you may not believe it, but I don't care. I'm just passing this along as evidence that possibly there's something you're missing. And I think about, I'm in my studio right now, but a guy that I was in the Coast Guard with way back in the early 80s. And before my book came out, I was working on it. He came to visit me for a little bit. He said, what are you working on? I said, well, I told him, well, now this is a hardcore old salt, you know, drop mm-hmm. F-bombs every 3 seconds kind of guy.
Right.
And no bullshit. And we're sitting here talking. I said, well, the book's about some things that have happened in my life that, you know, I can't explain. And that's why, you know, I'm writing it, because it helps me try to explain it and live it a little bit, and maybe give permission for other people to do the same. And he says, is it about talking to dead people? And I said, well, I don't know if exactly, but he goes, because ever since my mom and dad passed away, I hear them all the time.
Well, there you go.
Done. That was my litmus test for, I can continue now. So I think everybody, to a greater or lesser degree, whether they admit it or not, or even are aware of it or not, have some sort of inkling or inclination that maybe there's more going on than what we see in the headlines every day. And that if we paid more attention to the lifelines, things get better for us.
Oh, for sure. For me, coming out with a book called Stay Tuned, when I'm a hardcore journalist, you know, and I leave my job at CBS to kind of go interview these people, because I didn't believe in any of it. And I thought they were all frauds. And I thought, wait a second, I should get a manual together for people who don't, you know, who are going to get taken advantage of, because grief is very pricey. When you're grieving, you will pay anything to feel better, right? And so for me, all these people wrote to me and said, don't do this. You're going to ruin your career. Don't do this. And then with just as many of those letters, John, the other half came through and said, mm-hmm. I believed in this my whole life. Congratulations for saying it. A lot of people are afraid to go there, but that's just their fear. Keep going, keep going, keep going. You know. And then when I'm Spiritual Damage came out, my second book, I talked about how my young son at the time, when he was just barely 2 years old, was seeing my dad, who died 6 years before he was born.
Wow.
And he's recounting things that only dad and I knew, and very specific. And, you know, it was really mind-boggling. So I write about mm-hmm. that, and I'm Spiritual Damn It. And then the floodgates open, John. All these people sending me letters of their kids seeing Nana, who died 10 years before came to this earth, and da-da-da-da. So that's when I start realizing, okay, these wires are crossed, and there is a lot going on that we can't possibly see, hear, mm-hmm. or understand. And you can relate to this. I mean, doctors used to sell cigarettes on television.
Right, right.
They would light up a Camel and say, "What cigarette are you smoking? I smoke Camels." That was real. And that was because that was the information we had at the time. It's all we had at the time. So we do what we know at the time based on what we know at the time. And I just want to give people as much information so that they can expand that knowledge instead of judge people because they don't have it yet.
Yeah. You know, we're not here very long in this forum. That's obvious. And I was thinking about this yesterday at the gym when I was sitting on the bike or the treadmill walking away. Another fascinating thing. And I could walk a mile and a half to the gym, but what do? I drive there and then I got the treadmill, walk a mile and a half. Right? That makes sense. I know. But anyway.
You spend a lot of time at the gym, my friend.
I do.
You know, I walk the neighborhoods until it's snowing sideways and then I figure something out.
But I'm a gym rat, always have been. And a lot of, when I start working out, that whole mind-body thing gets going. But then the spiritual part like kicks in the middle of those because I'm busy. And I'm not paying attention to other stuff. And so I can hear things and it just kind of settles in. And I did a TEDx talk on this in 2018 in Ontario about the human math and the concept that everybody listening to this show, no matter whether you're in New Zealand, Australia, or Ireland, or you're down there on Halstead Street with Burt Wyman Ford, everybody has a piece of paper somewhere or exists that says, this is the day you got here. This is the time that you got here. This is how much you weighed when you got here. Here's the people that brought you here. There's signatures around there. Here's the guy that delivered you or the woman. And there's that piece of paper there. But there isn't one human on the planet that has a piece of paper that shows when you're leaving.
Right.
There's no guarantee of that. Mm-hmm. So without that evidence, the bottom line is that this is an open-ended contract, but we all know how it ends because it ends the same for everybody, just at a different time. And because it's so short, you know, this I think the shell, this ego shell builds itself up to protect us in that time. And so we see the world as not as inclusive, but separate from us. That somehow, if I stay out of it enough, I will be the only lone survivor of history. And that doesn't ever happen. So I found for me, as my life has changed over the years and these accidents became incidents and I was able to learn from them and I've been able to kind of morph a little bit, I have found inclusivity is like the thing that keeps me more alive than being separate. So I have a lot of people that feel different than I do about a lot of stuff. I don't focus on that. I just focus on what we have in common. I just finished doing a year's worth of radio shows with Beijing, China, at probably the most difficult, challenging time in U.S.-Chinese relations.
Wow.
And every day for 365 days in a row, basically we taped the shows, but it was 7 shows a week. I was either talking to Hu Yang, who is a vaunted and highly celebrated broadcast journalist in Beijing on China Radio International. I talked with Bebe, my friend Bebe, who was previously a vaunted, highly regarded broadcast journalist who semi-retired and started a family. Or, and you were a guest at one point.
Mm-hmm, I was.
And so the whole concept of that show, The Bridge, was to bring the world together one conversation at a time because it's too noisy any other way.
Right.
And so while we're on a little bit of a hiatus, we'll see where all that goes. I look back on that year and I let it settle in and I think, you know, this is a piece of the puzzle. So that inclusivity that I think is so vitally important, like you started talking about in the beginning of this conversation, it finds its own level, whether it's The Bridge this week or the podcast this week or writing a book next week or going over to talk. I think our job is to deliver the mail. Whether anybody reads it or not, that's up to them.
Right. No, that is totally true. I mean, I'm so amazed at how much connection has been able to happen despite not being able to leave the house, right? And that what you just talked about with that show and The Bridge, that's a perfect example of it. I mean, I used to do live events every single month, having different authors telling their stories. And when COVID hit, I had to pivot my entire model and started these things I call the Spiritual Social Club, which is basically intimate Zooms, 15 to 20 people. People love this format even better because they feel like they get actual quality time with the expert instead of just being one of 150 in an audience or 250 in an audience. And so I never thought in my wildest dreams that would pivot like that and that I would be actually happier with these smaller groups, but I am. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm super excited to be in person again for the All Souls thing, but just being able to create something like you did with The Bridge and I did with my social clubs where people are feeling that connection, because at the end of the day, everybody, you can just breathe and picture like a cord going from your heart to somebody else's heart. Just that act alone of even picturing that. Like I'll do that with my son when I feel distant from him. I just picture a cord going from my heart to his heart. Boom. You're instantly connected energetically. The second you text with somebody, you're energetically connected to them. So if you want to do that with demise and disdain and anger, or do you want to do that with inspiration and gratitude and conversation. You right. have a choice with every exchange you make at every moment. So choose wisely.
Choose wisely. Invest with great purpose.
Yeah.
I think there is, you know, sometimes I get glimpses of clarity, but I think there's a whole group of people that their only job is to pull the world apart. Mm-hmm. And there's another group of people whose job is to put it back together. And that back and forth momentum is really the core of what the life experience is about, at least for me. Because, for example, the last 18 months to 2 years with this whole Cyrus the virus thing has been, in my opinion, less about the physical virus, which was devastating, unquestionable, but revealing who we are and who we're not. Because that's what circumstances do. They either define you, reveal you, or they show you the way through. And considering the fact that we had a similar experience, was back in, you know, the 1917, 18, 19, 20, somewhere in there, mm-hmm. with the Spanish flu, and people acted basically the same. To me, this was like a pop quiz.
Right.
That the same groups, even though the numbers are smaller, because the numbers are bigger now, billions of people on the planet, back then they didn't have that, but the breakdown was about the same. Back then there were people who didn't want to wear masks, they were anti-this, anti-that, and all that's still in play. And you think, well, the evolutionary, you know, we're still throwing shit at each other like monkeys, like I said, in the zoo. And that to me was like a test. How are we doing here? And when you pull back and look at it from that perspective, not just should I wear a mask or not, or it's against my, all that bullshit. When you pull back, and if you can kind of turn it a little bit and get a long view of these things, to me, you can't help not see the parallels. So to me, this is more about an evolutionary piece than it is about the physical piece. And on that note, that's why you do the things you do. And that's why I do the things I do. And the people that push things together say, let's wake up and smell the coffee, and then let's drink it on top of that. What a concept.
You know, it's so interesting. Speaking of coffee, I normally have at least 2 cups every morning. And I have been gearing up to do this, you know, here we are, Neti Pot Talk and wellness, a cleanse, because every season, it's like changing your oil in your car. I feel like, you know, just kind of, if you eat a bunch of awful food for a long stretch, which kind of happens here and there, it's just good to just take 5 days and eat really, really well and really healthy and just kind of be conscious. And that just sort of reboots. It's like control alt delete for the computer. And I had a friend who just did this, and on top of it, she lost 5 pounds. So I'm like, hey, all right. So,
on top of it.
You know, hey, so this morning I was getting ready to make the coffee, and it was like, wait a minute, is today the cleanse? Is tomorrow? And like, I'm like, well, you know, it is Kay's birthday this weekend. I want to go see her, so I'll probably have a Bloody Mary. So we can't do that. And my friend Kiki's birthday is tonight, so I probably want to go to dinner, maybe have a glass of wine. So, I mean, I was literally making every excuse possible not to do this 5 days. I mean, we're not talking 3 weeks, John. Yeah. It's just 5 days of no sugar, no alcohol, no dairy, no carbs, no excess, right? So no pizza, basically. No major food groups that I normally have. And I'm thinking to myself, isn't that the way we are, though, as humans?
Oh, yeah.
We're always making an excuse not to start what's really for our highest good. Like we'll think of everything and every reason. Now, of course, everything within reason, right? I'm not saying you have to cut out all the fun in your life and have a no fun life. You should have fun and gather with people and do those things, but also really focus on yourself too and do that self first. It's putting on your oxygen mask before the plane goes down so you can help your small child. It's the same kind of thing, and people don't realize that. So in the vein of putting on my oxygen mask, the other day, I got to share this with you, I went to get a massage. And I'm talking one of those massages where they beat the shit out of you. Like, you literally are afraid you're going to black out. Yeah. It's like they're jumping on you, on your back. It's a Thai massage. You're clothed. So I wear, you know, yoga pants and a t-shirt. And they're bending me like a pretzel. And I'm like, okay, lady. I'm like, I can barely talk. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And so sure enough, I do that, and I come out of there and I feel 3 inches taller, and it hurt so good. It hurt so good. And I went, that was $42. Okay. I'm worth $42 every couple of weeks. I mean, what the heck? $42 to feel 3 inches taller? What have I been waiting for? And it just kind of hit me like an anvil over the head. We don't do that enough. We don't self-serve enough. And we're walking around depleted with our engine lights on. Go get that massage, go have that, whatever it is, and just enjoy your friends, enjoy your life, but everything within reason. But don't forget to take care of yourself, because you'll be a much better, nicer person to be around.
You know, one of the best things about doing these shows, I still think this is radio. I mean, it's radio in a different format to some greater or lesser degree. And it's hard for me not to think about all the time that you and I've spent on radio in different places and together. And WGN always comes to mind, not knocking on them, but I'm just going to call it what it is. I remember, you know, being on there in rotation for a couple of years and watching how the certain talent, let's just put it that way, were catered to and all that kind of stuff. And really the return on all that catering never came back to the station. And then I see the Jen Weigels of the world who showed up, did their job, you know, it just filled in the blanks as they needed to do it. And all the pieces that go along, like you did on television as well. And it's really a crapshoot to some greater or lesser degree. But I wanted to point out that I think it was 2012 or 13. Even when I was at Harpo, we came up with this idea of doing John and Jen on WGN. Right. Eventually that would happen. It just rolls off the tongue. How you cannot do it, I don't know. Right. I could see the billboards on the Eisenhower. John and Jen on WGN. You got to envision it. But anyway,
yeah.
These days, and this is... When I say these days, meaning this is like the pinnacle of this stuff, there's a lot in the news about how there are many hosts, male hosts, that treat their female counterparts and as unequals, let's put it that way, putting it mildly. And you know, the one thing that I've always thought about was that, you know, I've never not seen you as an equal, if not superior to me in so many different ways. And I think of that when you're doing broadcasting and when you're a partner with somebody, you have to have that, in my opinion, mutual respect for that person. Otherwise, it's an uneven balance. And radio is kind of a shitty, you know, business at times. I don't know how it became that way, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
But can you shed a light how difficult that might have been for you? Or I know that it's been for you because we've talked about it a zillion times. And kind of talk about that piece of the business, because I don't think this is the stuff you don't get in the headlines or in the news blurb or in some column somewhere. From your perspective, how that's played out in your life and career?
Oh gosh. Well, you know what? I've just had to let things roll off my back. I mean, I thought I could handle anything because I worked with Danny Bonaducci. My God.
Well, that'll do it.
talk about out of the gates, you know, like one of the first jobs I had was doing his news. And I remember one day, you know, I was wearing this white shirt with like a big giant sweater over it, but like you can see the white shirt underneath, and he's like, you know, what did he say? He said, you know, your tits look better in the shirt you wore yesterday. And like, this was just a way to, you know,
was this on the air?
Oh, you know, no, it was in the hallway.
Oh,
like, whatever. No. And I'm like, all right, but you know, on the air, please. Then I go into another radio show and I'm getting asked if I put corn dogs up my butt, or, you know, I mean, don't get me started, the stuff I've had to endure on the air.
Mm-hmm.
But I digress. It happened because a culture was created that made it okay. And that culture was created that then continued with it. And it takes somebody to really, if you see something, say something. You know, one woman who's going to be up with us, it's All Souls, Stephanie Arnold, she had a near-death experience. She's, you know, literally 37 seconds she flatlined while giving birth to her son, but she dreamt it would happen. She got all these premonitions. She had all these dreams. She told all of her doctors. And it's like her saying now is, if you sense something, say something, because it could save your life. So she spoke up, squeaky wheel, squeaky wheel, squeaky wheel. Finally, her anesthesiologist listens, gets a crash kit ready just in case. That saved her life. And of course, the anesthesiologist was named Grace. How great is that? Right? So what I'm saying this is because you have to say something. And I have always stood up for what I think is right. And I urge anybody, I watched woman after woman, even in management, look the other way. I mean, now there's all these headlines with all these things going on with this station here in Chicago, Glenn Mix, and these women coming forward for years and years and years. And supposedly, according to these women, management looked the other way. I'm saying this, if there's anyone in management right now and you see something and you don't say something, I don't know how you sleep at night. So you can only, you know, karma is really interesting. And whether it affects you in this life or your child then goes and gets a job and experiences all those things that you didn't prevent as somebody in management but could have,
mm-hmm.
that is how karma works. It will come back like a boomerang. You said the boomerang
earlier. Yes.
So while I, a lot of times, will sit up at night going, why did that happen and why was it okay and why was I not protected and why? Well, there's the thing called karma, and I know eventually, maybe not in this lifetime, maybe in your kid's lifetime or their kid's lifetime, it will be felt and it will reverberate through your family tree and your lineage, and you can just do the best that you can do at the time. And that's all I've ever done is I show up. My dad taught me this incredible work ethic. I'm trying to instill that in my child. He hates it. He hates rules and boundaries, and that I won't let him have the phone on his pillow every night until he goes to sleep. Could you imagine, John? I didn't have a TV in my room or the phone. It was a landline. It was in the hallway. The TV was in the living room. Like, come on, kids. We'll survive. Get the phone out of your room. But he hates it. But I hope it'll rub off. Right now, I'm the bad guy. Right now, I'm the mean parent. I'm the bad cop. But here's hoping it rubs off in a good, positive way, because structure is important and rules are important. And it obviously rubs off eventually. At least it rubbed off with me. And I know it did with you, because you have an incredible work ethic, too.
That was the thing. You know, you're talking about all the high-minded spiritual stuff. But on this plane of existence, it's all about work ethic.
Right.
My dad was a banker, went to work 35 years to the same, basically the same company that was sold three or four times. I remember watching him walk to work and walk home. And and years later, you know, I never had done, I mean, good thing he taught me to a greater or lesser degree about finance, because you don't learn that shit in high school. But I told him years later, I said, Dad, the any success that I have, whatever that might be, and this was early on in my career, because he passed in 04. I said, it's work ethic, and I learned that from you. And he was kind of confused. And he said, well, I was never on the radio. I said, that's not the point. Matter of fact, it was really funny, because not long before he died, I brought him to Michigan, where I was on the air, and he sat at my house listening to me for my three-hour afternoon show. When I got back, he said, they pay you to talk? Yeah, Dad, they do. Right. Well, then keep doing it. You know, up till then, it wasn't real. It was just, you know, that was... Up till then, radio was Wally Phillips and Bob Collins on the radio on top of the fridge in the morning and in the afternoon. It wasn't for my kid. But that work ethic is everything. And I think when you, to me, when you separate all the stuff out on a table and this mind, body, spirit thing, work ethic has to be in there for each one of those things, putting in the work on how you think. Because as you mentioned before about taking a bit of a cleanse, you know, if you are what you eat, then you are what you think. And what you think comes from what you watch, what you connect with. And over time, we become numb to it. You know, you said before about that not being wellness a priority, or, you know, for companies. I, you know, I get bombarded, and my skin has gotten thicker over the years, but there are holes in the armor at some point. It comes down to these drug commercials. It's just drive me up the frickin' wall.
Yeah.
And there was one on for some disease that I can't even remember, which is great. And I'm like, you know, went on the whole thing and how it's going to help you. And then a minute of it could kill you and make you, you know, bleed out of your ass and all this kind of stuff. And so I went to look up this disease, and it's rare. Less than 200,000 people in the world get this.
Oh, my.
And I'm thinking, I'm sitting here trying to watch a football game, have a sausage sandwich, and I'm watching this crap. And go ask your doctor if you're one of 200,000 people out of 7 billion that have this. What? Right. So when that's, you know, repetition is everything. Work ethic to me is repeating behaviors that work and those that don't, and then deciding which is which. Going to the gym is all about repetition to get stronger. So when we see this stuff over and over again, and if we don't push away from it, it becomes part of us, even though we don't realize it. And I think that can work for you or against you.
Yeah, no, it absolutely can. I mean, that's such a great point about the pharmaceutical companies just taking over in every commercial. I challenge anyone who watches the news at night. Every single commercial is a pharmaceutical company. There's no more, and maybe an occasional car dealer here and there, but really, honest to goodness, it's taken over. And so that has become the reality of we're not well. They want us sick.
Yeah.
You know,
no
we
question.
Can't feel empowered. No, we have to feel like we depend on that drug to get us through so we can smile at the table. Like, never did anyone think to ask, what is your diet? How are you feeling?
Right.
What are you putting in your body? Right. You know, I mean, that is the thing. We are containers. We are condos for ourselves every single day. What are you putting in your container? Because, you know, if I say this all the time, Jim, look at, you're a gym rat. You say so because physically we can see if you go to the gym or you don't.
Right,
we can
see. Right.
The results are visible and they're immediate. But with our bodies inside, we have this shell on the outside. So you can't see the insides unless you get an x-ray. And I posted this on my Facebook thing, this wonderful TED talk by Dr. Daniel Amen, who does brain scans.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we are always giving pills for depression or for this or for that without a single brain scan to know what part of the brain is firing.
Right.
And if your parts of the brain are not working and you're not feeling joy, then maybe there are other things you can do other than just take this pill. But what if, God forbid, you get the wrong pill and it activates the wrong part of your brain? Then you're hospitalized. Then you're institutionalized. Why are we not making it regular, unbelievably, like, just required that anyone who takes an antidepressant has to have a brain scan to find out exactly what they need? You wouldn't put, you know, you wouldn't put a cast on your leg unless you knew what bone was broken, would you? So what part of your brain is broken? So this is, again, going back to that, why aren't we changing the way people think about this? It just takes one person to make it a requirement, and then it will be so. One person to say, that's not tolerable in this workplace, and then it will stop. So if you see something, say something. If you sense something, say something. But be the squeaky wheel and demand change, because you know in your inner compass what's right and what's wrong. We all do.
Yeah, we just don't listen to it. Mm-mm. You know, I was thinking, as you mentioned that about the depression part, without oversimplifying this, I'm thinking about my friend, the late, great Wayne Dyer. Mm-hmm. Did many shows with Wayne back in the day. And there, every time he was on the show, let's say he was on in a year, probably 6-8 times. And that's a lot. Mm-hmm. And we would get a phone call from some woman who just hated him. Mm-hmm. Oh, she met my producer. No one knows. Why? I don't know why you even have this guy on. He's this. And he went on and on and on. And of course, you know, okay, sure. You can air it out. That's up to you.
Right.
And probably one of the last couple times I had him on before I went from my own show to the Oprah Radio Channel, I had him on. He was talking about depression. Mm-hmm. And he was going on about how, you know, depression, he used the same term, I think. He didn't want to oversimplify it, but he says, you have to start with you, meaning what are you doing to add to this? How are you seeing the world? What are you feeding yourself? I mean, he came up with all these things because that's what Wayne Dyer, what about this? What about that?
Right.
And it made sense on the level that it made sense. Like, I'm feeling depressed. Well, why is that? No, just call your doctor and get an antidepressant. And he started naming off the things. He said, go to bed earlier, drink more water, turn off the news, things that you're talking about, we're talking about here.
Right.
And I remember the phone rang and this woman called back sobbing to my producer. I've been so depressed for so long and everything he says is true and I didn't want to listen. You know? And so it took, every time he was on, she hated what he was saying, but she finally got it.
Finally. And that's such a great message for anybody that's listening. It's like so many doctors don't even ask, well, what are you eating? Well, are you self-medicating with Pinot Grigio? Like, what's happening here? You know, that's a depressant, there's so many things that people do to cope. Their coping mechanisms are making it worse. And a lot of these people aren't asking the correct questions, but then there are a lot of them who are.
Mm-hmm.
So I celebrate those who are. And to anyone out there who's struggling and depressed, just know this, you're not alone, but there's also a possibility that something is contributing to that that could be fixed quickly, like with water, mm-hmm. like with more rest, like with even just a quick meditation. I have this HemiSync app on my phone. HemiSync meditation, and I think that this is important for you and your listeners to know about this type of meditation. Basically, it sounds and beats and percussion in the right ear than the left ear. And what it does is it's scientifically proven to connect both sides of the brain. So if you have any trauma or PTSD or stress, it literally heals the neurons. And it came out, they created this at the Monroe Institute in the 80s for soldiers who had PTSD. And so it's called binaural beat. And you could just Google binaural beat on YouTube or HemiSync, H-E-M-I-Sync.
I've heard of this, yes.
And it's I do it every single day. If I wake up irritated, didn't feel like I got good sleep, or if I'm like have a bad Zoom, it didn't go well, boom, pop it on. 9 minutes later, 3 minutes later, you feel completely recharged. And that's science, people. So instead of just going and making the cheese sandwich and whatever it is that you
cheese
think you need.
Sandwich.
I don't know. Try a little meditation, a glass of water. You'll be like, woo, I feel amazing. You know?
Of all things to pick, you come up, how about a cheese sandwich? Because that's what we eat.
Yeah, well, you know cheese. What? My happy place, like when I was a kid, grilled cheese with Velveeta, by the way.
The more
chemicals, the better.
That's right.
And the tomato soup, like Campbell's tomato soup and a grilled cheese with Velveeta.
Did you ever dip it? You dip it in there?
All the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Listen, last couple minutes we have together, this is a really open-ended and probably not fair question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. You've done so much. You've accomplished so much. You have been in these various platforms that I get to watch your journey. It's like a reality show for sure. And you know, whether it's radio or these things you've done on TV with Chicago FD and Chicago PD and Chicago MD and all the other shows that you've been on, and I mean, you're working on a book with the Murray brothers. I mean, it seems like you don't have an off switch. What's the big aha for you? You know, you've been at this quite a while on all these different levels. Is there like a big aha or takeaway at the end of the day for you? Like, is there like, wow, this is all fill in the blank?
No, because you know what? Just you saying that I don't have an off switch shows me that I need an off switch, you know, because that's really what it is. When I look back at all and I read back on my stories and I realize how much fear was behind all of that doing. And I say this to anyone listening, that if you're a human doing and not a human being, you got to start being in your world. You have to feel your life. And I couldn't feel my life for so long because I was so busy racing to get the next job. I was barely present in the current one because I thought, well, then when this ends, then what? Right? And so for this pandemic for me was the ultimate reboot of, what do you really want to do? What does that look like? How can we do that? How can we figure out ways for you to feed yourself and your kid while doing what you like, but being smart about it, right? It literally forced me to slow down. It forced me to sit. It forced me to meditate. It forced me to do all the things I preached about, but wasn't really practicing. So I would say to anybody right now, it doesn't matter what's on your resume. What matters is how you treat people at the gas station, at the restaurant. I mean, I've met so many people, they've won every award possible, but when they treat their waiter like shit and don't tip, they're a horrible human being. I don't care how many accolades they have. I don't care how many initials you have behind your name. How do you treat your dog? How do you treat your child? How do you treat that stranger at the bus stop that needs directions? That is what matters. And that is the stuff that, according to all the dead people I've interviewed that have come back, those are the instances that you will see played back in your life review. How did you make people feel? You know, that Maya Angelou quote, right? You might forget what they say, but you will always remember how they made you feel.
Yeah.
So you have to feel good to make someone else feel good. And that is the thing we forget. Self-service is not selfish. It's putting on your oxygen mask so that you can help another with clarity. Do you want the guy flying your airplane to be tired? Do you want the surgeon opening your brain to be on little sleep, Papa No-Dos? I don't think you do. So there's a reference you haven't heard in a long time.
No-Dos. They still make that?
Am I dating myself?
Velveeta, No-Dos, and neti pots.
Oh, that's awesome. What I am. I'm the combo platter for you, John.
Jen, thanks so much for taking the time. I will see you in a couple of weeks at the Abbey. And if people want to still get involved, I know there may be a few seats left. How do they do that?
Yeah, just go to jenweigel.com, JenWeigel.com. It's right there on the homepage. Just click on the beautiful poster that says All Souls. I literally think as we speak, we might have 3 spots, and that might just be for the person listening that's inspired right now to click.
Awesome. Thanks for listening. Be well. Until next time, safe travels. Adios.